And you're listening to Rumor Mill News Radio. This is Raylan Allen live. This is Friday, April 10th. And right now we have got a very special guest. We have John DiNardo. John DiNardo has been researching conspiracies for probably 20 years, maybe more. And I want to welcome him to Rumor Mill News Radio. Hello, John.
Hello, Ray Allen. It's a pleasure being with you and your audience.
And John, I thought that your whole background was a radio person, but I just went to Brian Hall's conspiracy news website, and he has you listed as a physicist and a professor.
Not a professor. Actually, I'm a physicist, a physics science, let's put it this way. I graduated with a bachelor's degree in science education. I taught high school physics. I specialized in physics and biology in college. Taught high school physics, then went back into my original field of electronics. Worked with a number of companies as an electronic circuit designer and electrical engineer. Spending the remainder of the last part of my career with Bell Laboratories.
Oh my God.
So it's been physics teaching and electronics, the circuit design that occupied most of my career. But in between, my real love, well, I loved electronics and science too, but my real love has been bringing out the truth.
And you were in the belly of the beast working at Bell Labs.
Yes, I think we all are, aren't we? Whenever you work for a big corporation.
Yes, that is absolutely true.
How pervasive it is.
Yeah, about 20 years ago, I knew that I could never work for anybody again. And that's one of the reasons. Well, actually, believe it or not, I became a teacher, just like you did. I went back to teaching.
Well, that's a wonderful profession to be in, because it does stimulate our hunger for the truth.
And you are relatively free. If you get hired and you get tenure, you're free to do what you want, within bounds. Of course, I couldn't teach my students about all the conspiracy theories. They would have made up a reason to fire me.
Right.
So, John, as I said, I've only known you as this tremendous voice of truth coming over, the radio. You had a show on one of the major radio stations in New York, if I'm not mistaken.
No, I did not. Actually, what I did was, here's how that confusion probably arose.
Okay.
I used to tape these broadcasts from Pacifica Radio's WBAI in New York City, and I felt the information was so vital and so important for people to receive that I began to transcribe it and put it out on the internet way back when the internet was in its infancy. And people were doing nothing but quarreling back and forth and name-calling back and forth. They had not understood the real potential of the internet at the time.
Right, right.
And most of the people using the internet are what the new followers of the internet were those who were in universities and in corporations.
Right.
Were corporations that gave them the freedom to get on the internet. And I was fortunate to be within AT&T Bell Laboratories at that time. And because I was posting, I had created this daily episodic news subscription called The People's Spellbreaker.
Oh,
and
what
it was designed great to do just
title.
That, to break the spell that had been put over the people's minds by the mass media.
Well, you must have been successful, because I remember, when the Usenet was all that we had on the internet. And you're right. Everybody was fighting and name-calling, and, I got out of it completely. I didn't want to even be a member of it. So I don't see that much anymore on the internet. Now I see honest-to-goodness people who are genuinely searching for the truth. But, the truth is so obscure, and they've hidden it so well that even though we may think that we're telling you the truth as we know it, a little bit down the road, you get a little bit more information, and guess what? It tells you that a whole bunch of stuff that you thought was true wasn't true.
That's right. You gradually begin to tear down a house that is infested with termites and about to collapse. That's the house of deceit. And you gradually rebuild it, the lumber, pieces of lumber and brick and mortar together to rebuild a strong structure of truth. But it takes time. It takes consistent discipline to follow what's happening in the news and to sort out the, pull out those rotted pieces of wood that the termites have eaten away so that they're hollow inside and worthless, but yet they appear to be, painted, newly painted and okay on the outside. That's the mass media.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Absolutely right. And so, John, today I wanted to talk to you about 2012, but my God, you have so much information. I mean, I honestly think you have as much or more than Rumor Mill News has.
Oh, I don't know. We both have quite a bit because we've both been pretty, both of us have been stirred emotionally and out of a sense of righteousness.
Yes.
To seek out the truth, and as a result, it's been our food.
It's like there's something inside of me that I can not stop doing this.
Right. Well, I love that. It's a wonderful, wonderful characteristic.
Well,
and I think people who like us recognize its value. It's like looking at real gold in comparison to fool's gold.
Yeah.
And you look at the character of a human being, and you can judge their character by their zeal for the truth, or their lack of concern for the truth. There was an old saying somebody had said, could have been Winston Churchill, but it goes something like this, that many, many people at some time in their life hear the real truth, the shocking, ugly truth, and most of them are unaffected by it. They hear it, they recognize it, but their lives are not changed in accordance with the truth. However, a few people, very few, their lives are changed, and they pursue that as a life's goal.
So, John, how did you start finding out the information about 2012 and Planet X?
Okay, it came to me, actually. I just happened to hear about Mark Hazelwood's book, Blindsided, Planet X to Return in 2003. Of course, that was like so many predictions. They're always well before their time, far more premature than the actual coming date. And this was one of those cases. But nonetheless, the truth is still the truth. And it's like a bus. You're waiting for a bus, and the bus is late. But a rational person realizes that bus will come. It may be late, but it's coming. Same thing with Planet X. We see evidence every day. How did I get on it? I just happened to hear about Mark Hazelwood's book, and immediately, and this was like a spiritual realization that came to me. I'm sure it came from God, because ever since that time, there have been other spiritual awakenings and inspirations that have come to me from God, pushing me in the same direction of understanding, learning about, and seeing the spiritual connection to Planet X. And finally, these inspirations have driven me to try to bring it to the attention of others. Just as Noah tried to bring the coming of the great flood to others. So I know this inspiration came from God. The very first inspiration I got without knowing anything about Planet X, I heard about it, Mark Hazelwood's book, and as soon as I heard about that, in the very instant, I knew that with great impact on my sense of realization that it was true.
Well, now tell us about Mark Hazelwood.
I didn't know why it was true, but I just knew it was true.
Can you tell us about Mark Hazelwood's book a little bit? Because, I can remember when it came out. Now, Mark Hazelwood, isn't he the singer? Isn't he the one that sang?
Well, his father. Yeah, his father was the singer.
Oh, his father was the singer. Okay.
The Wood, who made the songs with Nancy Sinatra. And he was a great musician, and he unfortunately passed away, I think, last year or the year before.
Uh-huh.
But the book is, I'll read you, I'll just go through some of the really brief, because we've got so much to cover here. But
okay.
Mark did a wonderful job at the time. He was very spiritually committed to bringing the truth out. And he's made a great contribution. Since then, he has sort of subsided into a spiritual realm and doesn't really get into Planet X much anymore. He's left it to other people like me, I guess, and a few others to pick up on it. But here's what some of the table of contents of the book Blindsided by Mark Hazelwood. Blindsided. I'll just read briefly some of the table of contents. Observatory sightings of Planet X in early 2001. The 12th Planet, book by Zechariah Sitchin. Ice Ages and Great School Science. And that chapter gets into how we were deceived by our, in our schools about, as to the Ice Ages and how they were, came about. They told us they came about over thousands of years when in fact they came about over a very brief period of time during catastrophic upheavals of the Earth. Okay, Ice Ages. Sumerian descriptions of our solar system. Now these are this regards the Sumerian people, S-U-M-E-R-I-A-N, Sumer, which was the land of Iraq, Persia.
That's it.
Thousands of years ago, when they knew they had pictures of the solar system, they were very advanced, believe it or not. We've been taught that ancient societies were primitive, but we have found evidence, archaeological evidence, that these societies were advanced. We could see some of the stone tablets. Many, many tablets have been garnered from excavations, and they've been able to decipher them. And found, and not only that, but from drawings. And I think a lot of the drawings imply that there were space people who had flying machines, basically. And that's why you see people talking about chariots of the gods.
Right,
they thought
right.
that ancient space travelers came to Earth. Well, those were actually the people who lived on Earth. Now, I don't got too deeply into that, but there is Sumerian descriptions of the solar system where they showed this additional planet in the drawings that have been unearthed on clay stone tablets, and also on these steel, what they call cylinder seals, I believe, that it depicted the solar system by astronomers, ancient astronomers of that time, who showed an additional planet in the outer boundaries of our solar system, a planet that we could not see now, or we could not see in recent history because it was not there. However, it had traveled inward from another distant sun back in those days, and it had reached a point where it was approaching the solar system in those ancient times, and that's why they were able to see it and depict it on their drawings. You see, this planet, we've learned from ancient history, from several incursions of this planet into our solar system. We've, for example, one incursion was around 8,600 to 9,000 BC. The next incursion was around 5,000 BC, which caused the flood of Noah's Day. The flood of Noah's Day was actually found to be around 5,000 BC. And then the third incursion that we know of in our recorded ancient history was around 1400 to 1500 BC, at the time of the Israelites' exodus from Egypt, which caused this incursion caused all these great plagues that are described in the book of Exodus of the Bible. So we have three incursions of this planet coming in cyclically like a bus on a bus route. And you can look at its time schedule. It came in around 8600 to 9000 BC. Scientists and theologians have both confirmed this date.
And John, we gotta hold it because you can hear the music. So scientists and theologians have both confirmed this. This is Raylan Allen on Rumor Mill News Radio. I'm talking with John DiNardo. We're talking about Planet X right now, but believe me, we're gonna range far and wide, and we'll be right back. And you're listening to Rumor Mill News Radio on the Micro Effect Radio Network. This is Raylan, and I'm talking with John DiNardo, who's been researching conspiracies as long or longer than I have. And we're talking about Planet X. We've been talking about Mark Hazelwood's book. And John just finished saying that both scientists and theologians know about this. Isn't that wonderful, John, that they don't bother telling us?
Yeah, it is. It's very disconcerting to hear such deafening silence on the subject. However, there are a few scientists who are breaking through. There's, for example, and incidentally, I would urge your listeners to have a pen and paper ready because they might want to jot down some of this information. Incidentally, can I give my email address?
Oh, absolutely.
You can get involved with.
Yeah.
Okay, well, the email address is planetxnow@yahoo.com. planetxnow, all one word, at yahoo.com.
And I'll go into Rumor Mill News and post it there so that people who are driving while they're listening to this can actually go over to the reading room in Rumor Mill News, and they will have your email address.
Right, and it's the easy one to memorize, too.
Right.
Yes. You know, Brent Miller is a scientist with the Horizon Project, thehorizonproject.com.
Yes.
And he's one of a group of scientists that have spent a great deal of money, a great deal of time and effort in studying these Earth catastrophes that seem to be coming very soon to destroy, to cause massive destruction and actually a dislocation of civilization around the world.
Wow.
And they've been studying this because they have a sense of responsibility, I guess, to bring out the truth, unlike other scientists who are paid to keep their mouths shut. Otherwise, they won't get government funding. But Brent Miller and his team of scientists have found that, indeed, there was global cataclysm that occurred around 9,000 B.C., and I say it could have been around 8,600 B.C., because, and I'll tell you why in a minute, but it doesn't really make much difference a few hundred years here or there, you know, when you're dealing with such long time intervals, is understandable. But he says it's around 9,000 B.C., and that was the sinking of Atlantis. That's what he contends, and other people too. Other scientists, and Mark Hazelwood himself in his book, have stated that this was when the continent of Atlantis sunk beneath the sea. And we can find Brent Miller and his team, and many others before him, have found the remains of Atlantis off the coast of continents around the world, off the coast of Japan, 3,000 feet deep off the coast of Cuba,
wow,
off the coast of Florida, I think it's 40 miles off the coast of Florida, is what's known for many years as the Bimini Road.
Yes, we have heard about that. Now, what is this man's name, and how can we look him up?
Brent Miller. Brent, B-R-E-N-T, Miller.
Uh-huh.
And you just go to thehorizonproject.com.
Okay.
And
that's perfect.
Right, and he has been finding, as others before him have found, these cities. I mean, they're beautiful cities underneath the sea. They're ancient cities, too. Now, I'll take you back to a video that was produced by some wonderful people. One of them was the actor George Kennedy. I don't know if you remember the actor George Kennedy from the 1970s.
I certainly do.
Okay, he was, you know, socially concerned enough to narrate this video called The Jupiter Menace, when they thought that Jupiter would be the planet that's going to cause destruction. And that video put out, I guess, around 1980 or 82, somewhere around there.
John, can we hold this for a moment, because we actually have a caller who'd like to get something through, like to get a question asked. And so we're talking about the Jupiter Menace, and as soon as the caller hangs up, we will get back to that. Mike in Washington, go ahead.
Yes, William?
Yes.
When I'm calling about it, I want to ask you, in regards to your interaction with the Mars. I've been in the UFO scene since 1960, and I was wondering if you could, give a little information on that, and how I might do, maybe contact.
What I will do is I will put up the article that I wrote about it on Rumor Mill News, and so you'll be able to read the whole story. I'd like to keep this show on focus with John, if you don't mind. But I'll also have my email address in that, and you can email me. Thank you, Mike.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. So, John, we were talking about the hidden cities underneath the sea.
Yes.
And you were just telling us that George Kennedy had made a television film.
It was a video at the time, a videotape. And it was trying to warn the people of the world that these catastrophic events were about to occur, because scientists and psychics were both predicting them. So they put out this public interest documentary called The Jupiter Menace. Now, in it, in The Jupiter Menace, they have a psychic by the name of Alex Tanous. T as in Tom, A-N-O-U-S. You can look him up on the internet. He has passed away a number of years ago. But Alex Tanous was a strange guy, a brilliant guy, and he had psychic abilities. The people who were looking for these undersea cities buried under the ocean didn't know where to look. These were scientists trying to prove that there had been catastrophic events that destroyed the Earth and reshaped the land surfaces of the Earth in ancient times. They were trying to prove this by fathoming these depths of the ocean and finding where these lost cities had sunk. And they went to Alex Tanous because Alex Tanous had a track record, very accurate track record of finding lost objects and people. The police had hired him as a psychic to find lost objects, people. So they went to Alex Tanous, and Alex Tanous in the video says, I'm going to paraphrase what he said. He said, I went to find this lost city, and I went out of my body. That means a part of me went out of my body, and I swam in the ocean to look for this lost city. And I found the most beautiful remains under the ocean, these marble spiral staircases going down into the depths of the sea, these columns, temples that you could not imagine their beauty. I saw these. Now, this is my commentary. So I'm thinking that he did not see the actual cities as they existed today, but he saw them as they existed then, because right now they would be encrusted with all kinds of growth, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
But what he saw was the actual cities when they existed. It was sort of a psychic, regression to the past.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the next scene of the movie, George Kennedy is aboard this big yacht, and he's saying many people did not believe Alex Tanous. They didn't take him seriously until they went to the exact coordinates where he had said that he found this lost city. And they sure enough, they found it right here. And they stopped the ship, and they did a sonar picture down below them, and what they found was a pyramid. They showed the sonogram of this pyramid with a capstone missing. Imagine that. The ancient occult symbols.
That's just amazing. You can hear the music. I was so lost. I forgot the music was playing. We'll be right back. I'm talking to John DiNardo, and what he's saying is fascinating. This is Raylan on Rumor Mill News, and I'm talking to John DiNardo. And John, you had me right on the edge of my chair. I didn't even hear the music. I almost missed that break. Wow. So you are talking about, now please repeat the man's name. He had some sort of psychic experience where he actually, in a dream, where he actually went to the cities below the sea.
That's right. I've got the videotape with him speaking and the actual excursion of this yacht with George Kennedy aboard, the actor George Kennedy,
mm-hmm.
where they went out and they stopped the yacht right above the coordinates in the ocean where Alex Tanous had stated that he found this lost city. And right below it, they did a sonar picture, and you can see the picture. They showed it right in the video of this pyramid right below them. With the capstone missing, here we have the occult practices, occult traditions occurring even then, as they're occurring today. On our, you know, as we see in all around our civilization today, and indeed on our dollar bill, the pyramid with the capstone missing. So they did find the ancient sunken cities. Those sunken cities were governed, dominated evidently by people who worshipped, in the same way, the Luciferian type of occultic religions that we see dominating the world governments today. So nothing has changed. And yet, it's so fascinating from several different viewpoints, the political transcendence of time, where everything is the same throughout thousands of years. That's fascinating in itself. You know, could consume quite a bit of time just exploring that subject. Then also,
I bet we could.
The geological amazing, the geological occurrences that are evidenced by these sunken cities. What could have happened to cause these cities to go from on the coast, land above sea level, down to the bed of the ocean? And some of that is explained, as I said, Brent Miller had found this here in the year 2000, 2007, 2008, 2009, working with the scientists of the Horizon Project, and yet it was found by Alex Tanis and other, you know, explorers, people whom I can absolutely, whose evidence we have absolutely witnessed on videotape, going back to the late 1970s, early 80s. So here we have confirmation of these lost cities. Now, the third confirmation of these sunken cities of Atlantis was given by James McCanny, sort of a confirmation. He's a physicist and studies astronomy and archaeology, and has mentioned on a number of occasions that the U.S. Navy has secret salvage operations off the northern coast of Australia, bringing up salvaging the remains of the lost continent of Atlantis, or the lost city of Atlantis. He claims, and as others do, that it was between somewhere what they call the Pillars of Hercules. I'm trying to remember exactly. I know some of it was in the South China Sea, but also it's reported by other historians and archaeologists to have been west of the Straits of Gibraltar in the Atlantic Ocean. So it's basically, and then we hear that sunken cities were off the coast of Japan, sunken cities off of Florida, but found by George Kennedy in the video. He says that they found a 1,000-yard-long wall, marble wall, called the Bimini Road, off the coast, 40 miles off the coast of Florida. Then off the Bahamas, there are more sunken areas. Then Neil Freer, another researcher, and others, he's passing on what other scientists have found, a 3,000 feet deep sunken city off the coast of Cuba. So we see these all over the world, and Brent Miller has stated the same thing, that these sunken cities, they are finding them all over the world. Now, what they state, and again, I have to constantly tell you that it's not only Brent Miller, but it's others such as John Moore, another researcher, and scientists have stated that what happens is, you see, you can probably visualize this, what I'm about to tell you. You can see it in a real world way according to your experience. You know, if you were to take a gelatinous ball, something that was stretched easily, like something that was made out of a liquid viscous material, and spin it like a top. If it were round when it was not spinning, what would it look like? What would its shape be like when it is spinning rapidly like a top? Wouldn't it be stretched out at the center? Now, this ball is made out of Jell-O, say.
Okay.
And you spin it. It's a round ball
absolutely.
Before you spin it, but now you rotate it like a top very rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
Its belly, or its equator, would stretch out, and it would no longer be round.
Yes.
Well, that's exactly what happens to the oceans of planet Earth, because the Earth is rotating
mm-hmm.
like a top.
Mm-hmm.
So the ocean waters are pulled outward by the centrifugal force, the outward-seeking force that we all feel when we make a right-hand turn in your car, you get pulled to the left. You make a left-hand turn in your car, you get pulled to the right, because that's what's called inertia, centrifugal force. Your body has inertia. You want to continue going in a straight line. All of a sudden, some force pulls you away from that line. You're going to continue to want to go in the same direction. That's one of Newton's laws of physics, inertia. So this is what happens in the sense it results in what's called centrifugal force in physics.
Mm-hmm.
And the Earth gets pulled out, the oceans are pulled outward. Now, when you have a pole shift, you take that top and you allow it to continue spinning, but then you tilt it in one direction so that its north pole is no longer, close to the very top of the globe, but its north pole is tilted further downward. Now, what was the outstretch of the equator becomes more northerly and southerly. It sort of spins at an angle. And now you have a new equator is formed that begins to create a new bulge. And what's going to happen? The areas of the ocean and land that were once stretched out or pulled outward from centrifugal force are tilted away, and now they begin to contract inward. Cities begin to sink. And then other cities rise up out of the water. The new equator, I guess, would submerge, the new bulging equator would submerge cities that existed before, cities that were not at the equator before. Similarly, the old cities that were close to the old equator now begin to, the oceans begin to contract inward, and then land begins to rise upward out of the ocean. So you get a total reshaping of the face of the Earth.
Wow, okay. That
makes sense. So this polar shift, it's all caused by a polar shift. But there's other things that also, you know, mess up the face of the Earth too, other forces. You might say, now, where does this take us? How did you get that polar? I think the next question would be, how did this polar shift occur where the Earth got tilted? Well, it's like a child. You have a child playing, watching a top spinning, and that child takes the palm of his hand and rests the palm of his hand against the edge of the spinning top. Now the top is going to slow down. Or if he were to take his hand and put it along the top of the top or near the bottom, he would cause the top to wobble or tip over, right? It would still spin, but it would tip.
Right.
And, well, what we have here in macroscopic astronomical terms is a giant hand. The hand does not physically touch planet Earth. It gravitationally touches Earth.
Okay, hold your thought. I can't believe we've already gone almost 45 minutes in this. We're talking with John DiNardo. I'm absolutely fascinated with what he is saying and losing track of time. This is Raylan Allen. You're listening to Rumor Mill News Radio, and we will be right back. We're talking with John DiNardo, who is a physicist and an electrical engineer, and he is explaining to us how Planet X has caused catastrophes in the past. And he was just talking about the actor George Kennedy, who made a film about the underground cities. And right at the moment, he's giving us the scientific explanation of how this has happened. And so I'd like you to just take up where you left off.
Okay, so we can look at this microcosmic example of a child touching a spinning top, either on the bottom or the top. He would cause that top to tilt as it's rotating, as it's spinning. And when that happens, then the top is no longer vertically erect, but it becomes oriented in a different way, so that what was the North Pole becomes something below the North Pole. Well, that's exactly what happened with planet Earth in several times in the past history, and I will give you the time indexes of when these happened at regular time intervals. Just
now,
like
when
bus,
this happens...
Just like a bus comes in at regular intervals. This planet comes in at regular intervals.
Exactly. Now, when this happens, the Earth doesn't physically flip over, does it?
It doesn't go as far as to flip over, but it tilts in that direction. And when that happens, that's when all the catastrophes occur. John White wrote a great book a while back. In fact, John White is one of the people, authors and scientists featured in the movie The Jupiter Menace with the late George Kennedy. John White says, what would happen? He wrote the book Pole Shift, and that's something a person might want to put in their mental notepad or write down, the book Pole Shift by John White. He was way ahead of his time, way back in the time when the video was made, back in the late 70s, early 80s, and he was predicting that this pole shift was going to occur. He said, what would happen in a pole shift occurred, it would be global cataclysm. You would have the oceans spilling out of their basins, creating tidal waves many hundreds of feet high. You would have earthquakes that were greater in seismic intensity than had ever been measured before. You would have wind storms well exceeding 200 miles an hour. No building could withstand that wind velocity except a dome home, which is something we should talk about. I don't want to forget about that because this is a survival information.
Yeah, about dome home
structure. It doesn't have to be a big livable home. It could be something just big enough to lie down in with you and your family. But if it's shaped like a dome, there's no way that the wind can pick it up. It can withstand 200 mile plus an hour.
And what is really wonderful is we have a dome home manufacturer who listens to Rumor Mill News Radio and has written us, and so we may be advertising with him, or he may be advertising with us.
I think that's going to be the advertiser and the people listening are both going to want to be a part of this, because it's going to contribute to the survival of many people.
Absolutely.
Well, John White goes on to say you'd have winds that were in excess of 200 miles an hour, and earthquakes, volcanic eruptions. He says all the volcanoes around the world would become excited because of the increase in this is another reason why, maybe not so much related to the pole shift, but to the electrical and electromagnetic influences of this passing celestial object, this huge comet, planet, this huge planet that comes in like a comet. You see, it also has a gravitational, in addition to its gravitational force, it has electrical and electromagnetic forces. And I can explain that a little bit later. But these forces affect the magma, the molten core of the Earth. And as a result, you have great heating of the molten lava, molten core of the Earth, and this stimulates the eruption of all the volcanoes on the Earth. Okay, so you have these volcanic eruptions all over the world, which spew out tremendous amount of volcanic ash, and we got an idea of how devastating this could be in 1989 with the eruption of Mount St. Helens volcano in Washington State. There was a tremendous coverage of the atmosphere, blockage of sunlight over a large, large area of the United States and Canada. So you can imagine when there will be this inevitable multiple eruptions of volcanoes around the world, and incidentally we have Mount Redoubt in Alaska ready to blow.
Really blow.
It's going to cause a tremendous blockage of light, and like a nuclear winter almost.
Yeah, it right at the moment appears to be clearing its throat, getting ready for the major one.
Yes, I mean, it's really coming on us, Ray Ellen. The signs are becoming quite obvious. And
let's add that other piece of the puzzle right now before I forget it. You know, one of my sources told me that the sun is going to be have a pole shift. Not that the sun flips over, it's just that the magnetic poles are going to shift. And evidently,
pole shift, yeah, it's possible. I don't know.
And evidently this happens quite often and nothing much happens. Well, the last time it happened in 1992 and we lost a few satellites. Okay, if it happens now, we have a heck of a lot more satellites up there. And so in other words, the same thing that just happened to my area where we lost all communications, we lost internet, telephones, you can't imagine how I felt. I mean, I didn't know what was going on in the world yesterday. And, I mean, we can't trust the mainstream media. They didn't even report on this sabotage yesterday. But if the sun's poles shift, it takes out electricity, it takes out computers. This means that we lose our water system. We are back to pitch black in major cities. So we've got pitch black in major cities and no water. No trucks to deliver the food. So in other words, we're back in the Middle Ages, and I totally expect riots to begin within the city. Now that's just if the sun really does do this flip right around 2011, to 2012. At the same time that you call it, this bus is coming by, and what my source told me is the crust of the earth is literally going to shift, and you said, oh, like the skin on a really ripe peach.
Yes.
And that's what some other source is telling me is coming in very soon.
That's right. Many separate sources, many unrelated sources are saying the same thing, that it's, you know, that all these events are about to happen. As you say, when the pole shift occurs, the crust of the earth is like the skin of a peach, a peach that's overly ripe, which slides easily. If you were to wrap your hand around the peach, you could and stretch it, sort of slide it over the inner juicy fruit. That's what would happen to the earth's crust. It would be a very similar phenomenon. And when that happens, you get wrinkling of the earth's crust. And these wrinkles, of course, the wrinkles on the skin of a peach would be magnified many millions of times to the size of the earth, and you would have 200, 300 feet high waves of the land itself waving like an ocean, only like mountains of rolls of mountains coming at you. It's just absolutely horrifying. Now, you know, but we don't, I know it's easy to scare people, and we want to go beyond scaring people and bringing them to the ultimate comfort of knowing that God loves every one of us. And God has been calling us in many ways. He's been very nice about it, to put it in like mundane terms. He's been very polite about trying to embrace us and showing his love for us. I look out my window, I see these beautiful yellow forsythia or wisteria flowers growing up, like just a whole ocean, a mountain ridge of wisteria in my neighbor's yard. And I look and I see the grass getting yellow, getting green, and the plants and the flowers coming up, and the birds in the sky, and just look around you, and then look at all the wonderful foods that God has given you, and then you realize God loves you, and he's trying to tell us that he's there, but we're not recognizing him. So he has to basically scare us a little bit.
Absolutely. So hold on, folks. We're going to be right back with John DiNardo, and even though it looks horrible in our future, John is telling us, have no fear. Hold on. We'll be right back.